That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, The Fanfic of Fanfic. That itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about a pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
One of these days, you will address me by my proper title, which is, I feel the need to remind you, Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Yes. So, hi, folks. We're back again. We're almost there. We're part two of the climax. We're almost at the end of like season two, book two, whatever you want to call it. We just got a like denouement episode after this, and then depending on how that goes, like I'm gonna try and time it out. We might either do that and then like a wrap up recap episode to go through everything that we've done for the season, or mush them together depending on like the lengths of them, because I didn't do it in the original one because in the first book like the chapter lengths were just not long enough to justify like doing a separate episode of just doing a recap, because we would have ended up with like a 40 minute episode of the last chapter. So I'm just playing it by ear, and then we'll see where it takes us. But for now, Weird, what did we learn last week?
Jeez, what did we... Okay. Really, all I remember is my joke about the situation. So we had kind of a repeat of the hilariously escalating non-stakes of the western town, Vash the Stampede style shootout, wherein like more and more threats kept getting added to the table. Where did it start? Because I seem to recall, right? All right. Oh, God. They were rescued by Nazis, specifically the main antagonist of Inglorious Bastards, but in horse shape, took all of their minor MacGuffins without any particular interest in the Maltese.exe.
Well, they have no interest in it. It doesn't do anything for them.
So they were allowed to go, and then suddenly, a idiot's version of a pony version of Alexander Armstrong from Full Metal Alchemist showed up.
Yes. Yes, he did.
A brief fight, and then an even bigger, dumber guy showed up. To my disappointment, he was not also pushed out by an even bigger, dumber guy. But anyway, so a bigger, louder, dude, who, much like, Horace Bronson, is very, very hyped for this war, exposits about that, and before he's able to, unleash the payload of an aircraft carrier onto our party, more bad guys so the Reavers show up, and it isn't described this way, but me and Fi were talking about it at the after we stopped recording last episode. Ideally, this fight would be effectively the Legion of Doom versus a battalion of Space Marines. So an eclectic, wacky group of random super mutants, not in the Fallout sense of super mutants, but like super powered freaks, chaotically laying into a row after row of robot armorized super warriors in tight formation. And so while that's going on, our party tries to escape, and then another threat shows up. Rampage, I think it was, attacks?
The Manticores show up.
Okay, the Manticores show up, revealing that, yes, indeed, they were pointless this whole time. had no greater significance on the plot, very specifically. Phi cut it, but I laughed myself nearly to death for 5 solid minutes at how dumb that was. Then Rampage shows up, tries to kill them. Turns out Rampage was completely right all along, and admitting that was enough for Rampage to rejoin the party. Then a zebra tank.
No, you missed a step. Then exploding like immortal horse shows up.
Okay.
And they fight her for a while, and she blows up. And then a tank shows up.
And then they get bored and teleport out. They use an escape rope and just leave the scene. So, as escalating threats, but throughout apparently non-existent stakes.
Well, I mean, it's the classic problem of, like, wars are really cool set pieces, but, like, these characters have nothing to do with it. Like, they are tangentially related by virtue of being at the blame to start this war, but they don't really have, like, a side they're rooting for or fighting for, and they're trying to, like, broker peace, so they don't really like fight anyone in that chapter because of that.
And also, it's kind of revealed like it's basically inevitable. Like they like they're looking for any excuse. So like let them destroy each other. It seems fine. Like we haven't seen any sign that they're like there's any civilian population like at stake here. That like this area they're fighting for. Over is completely abandoned. The only sign as of like episode prior to last that like there's actually any value over the territory that they're murdering each other over is that it's near an endlessly replenishing dungeon that can be delved to acquire resources from. But even then, like one of the other factions is the one who like ever
bothers
with that.
So I think there's a confusion of scope. It's not a single dungeon. The entire Hoof is like this. It's just that it's not really pointed out until we get to Finders Keepers.
Okay. So anyway, I can only assume they're fighting over like delving rights.
No. You're thinking in too practical terms. They're not fighting over... it's...
That's my sin. That's my mistake. I'm trying to make sense of it.
Well, it's... They're legitimately fighting because they have, like, a conflict of like, values, really? Like, the Rangers are all about, like, no one should be allowed to have technology but us because no one can be trusted with it besides us. And that puts them at odds with basically every other faction in the setting. It's just a matter of that they've had like a sort of like uneasy peace with everybody based off of a gentleman's agreement up to this point. And since that's been broken, like characters like Steel Rain are taking full advantage of it. Like, I don't know, it's not so much a war arc as it is like a petty squabble over bullshit arc, but like with really large numbers.
Yeah, and I remember there's like a really painfully long epilogue to like boop, we teleported out. Well, that was an interesting thing to have happened. Turns out it was entirely pointless. One of us is down a limb there was no reason to have done or experienced any of that. So what happened? Like, you know, I'm completely lost. I
no they go to the bar, they find out Rampage is the way she is. For dumb reasons.
She's all right. So for first time listeners, what are you doing here? Like guys, there's like 20 episodes prior to this. Probably better listening experience. Go check out those. So we've kind of covered this sort of before, but so last week it was in the part of the story we were covering, we finally find out that Rampage is a mesh of like there is no core Rampage. There is no core Rampage. It's a mesh of several like 6 different souls, squeezed into a pile of cancer flesh, I guess. that all agrees on a single shape, but not a single identity most of the time. It's bad and ill-conceived. Yep, that's okay. Yeah. The end.
The end. That's Rampage. Bad and ill-conceived. Yeah, and the only other thing that happens in that chapter is they like go to like Trottenheimer's like old lab and they like find out what makes the silver bullets work, kind of. And then they find like a wall of screaming pony flesh that's made of like an amalgam of corpses that are all like part of the wall now. And the chapter ends with them shrieking at BJ, basically, which this would be the time in which I would probably launch into a like perk, but we still haven't gotten a perk. We're 95% the way to a perk. The joke here.
There an XP bar at the bottom of the like?
In the footnotes, they just said like there's always been like a thing that says in the footnotes like where we are in terms of like leveling. So like careful listeners will pay attention to the fact that we've been dicked around like this for a couple of chapters now, and the reason why that is because Blackjack is reaching max level with air quotes in Fallout 3 terms, which is level 30, really soon, and. Sombra and his infinite wisdom didn't pace this out very well, and because of that, we're now stuck in a situation where he has to keep padding for time before she actually hits the like level up screen to get the final perk. So that's why we're getting like that's why this like it's a compounding of stupid bullshit where like this system didn't work in the first place, and you had to like force it. And then you made it so much dumber by, like, not pacing your story well enough to be able to, like, fit this contrived video game element into the story correctly. So now you have to, like, pad it out super bad. But I guess I should get into this chapter, shouldn't I?
Should you? I don't know.
We're almost there.
Listeners, how about you vote? We'll take a week break, and then after we get all that feedback, you're so good about giving us on Twitter and so forth, we can decide whether or not if I should open the damn episode. Just rip off the band-aid. Just,
all right.
What are you doing? Don't humor me.
All right. Like,
you
know all right.
That I'm only.
You're here to suffer.
I'm you at this point. I am.
All right, all right.
Avoiding my fate.
So chapter 32, choir. So part two, climax chapter. Yep.
I don't like the sound of that.
I don't like the sound of that either. All right, so we open back up to BJ being menaced by the wall of evil pony meat. They all sing in chorus and they all like talk in this weird, goofy, mystical way about like. You know, come join us. You're basically like us already. You're part of the choir almost already, and it's this big dumb contrived scene of dumb garbage that doesn't fit in this setting very well. But BJ is slowly sinking into the wall meat because like she's like enraptured by what's going on, and then like the floor wall meat is starting to like pull her in by her legs.
What was the name of Atreyu's horse?
I don't remember. I wish. It's the horse sinking into quicksand, but it's like pony meat. But Rampage keeps like urging her to try and like get out of the room and like is begging her to move this whole time while the voices are speaking. But there's a really goofy moment where like BJ like asks like, okay, like you're a choir of voices, like are you like the goddess? And then they like mock the goddess for some reason because like this story is so insecure about its storytelling that it can't help but, like...
She saves herself because the entire wall gets... No, we are a better evil collective, Hive Mind. We're so much darker and more metaphorically significant.
And then they just scramble like cartoons out of there. But like I just want to like take 1 second to complain about this kind of storytelling. If if you feel the need to be like, well, you know that one of the most significant villains in the original story? Well, this is like that, but twice as cool. You've made a mistake. Like, you need to go back and rethink your villains. Especially because this fucking plot point, it just goes on and on and on. But the only real consequence of this whole sequence is that, like, they make Blackjack's, like, legs even worse, because now she's... her limbs are modded with tumors, and, like, all the, like, flesh is, like, horrible and bruised, and her legs now.
Oh, no, the noodles are al dente.
The noodles. Yeah, she's even more jacked up. So as a detail, this entire chapter, because I'm not going to have a good point to talk about it, I'm going to bring it up a couple of times, this entire chapter is death flags for BJ. The entire thing. Because this thing keeps talking about, like, the ever after, and, like, you will join us soon whether you like it or not. And, like, her legs are even more jacked up, and just, like, everything's bad. But they manage to get above surface, and they reconvene with the crew, and they talk about, like, the silver bullets, and, like, they come to the hard realization that, like, the silver bullets have been, like, coating her in the weird rainbow goo that is taint every single time she's been firing it, and that's, like, so she's been killing herself by orders of magnitude every single time she fires it. So this is all Blackjack being an idiot. So cool. But it just sort of reiterates how fucked Blackjack is all over again. Yeah, hard cut to they're back on the road again. A lot of this chapter is them like the first half of this chapter is a lot of them wandering through like the burnt out city that's just before the like naval base and aircraft carrier. They find a lot of dead bodies. There's a lot of, like, horses that have been, like, firing squad very clearly. Like, they've been, like, put up against a brick wall and then shot to pieces. And they notice that a lot of innocents have been killed in this, because we really need to reinforce that the Rangers are bad guys now.
Great, sure.
But just in luck, they find some people being harassed by a bunch of raiders with Rangers with hilarious British accents that they bump into, and BJ like name drops that she's security and she'll put them in the ground.
Wait, what's all this Python reference? Python reference?
Exactly. They're all like, oh, blimey, Jellycut, you're security. You're a hero of the waste, and then we get another speech about how cool Blackjack is, and it turns out that these are good guy rangers from Trottenham.
Way more famous and cool than that little pip.
Yes, twice as cool.
Very specifically.
She's very specifically two little pips strapped together. That's how cool she is. She's got a black and red mane and everything. Blackjack is, in fact, the Shadow the Hedgehog of the Fallout Equestria universe.
Why, that little pip should never be as cool and edgy and realistic as to have noodle arms.
And a drug problem.
I digger.
But yeah, they talk with them for a while. Everyone marvels at how cool Blackjack is. Strong Hoof also conveniently shows up again. Being a big cool guy, he rambles on for a while, talks about how cool they all are, makes goo goo eyes at Lacuna. A lot of inconsequential shit. But we get the plan for what they actually plan to do when they get in the naval base, which is just to get Fate captured again. There's only ever two plans in this story, getting Fate captured or using disguises. It's all that works.
I mean, stick with what you know. Like,
if it works...
Dominant optimal strategy.
Yeah, like, if it works every single time, then cool. But yeah, we get a little story about Elder Crunchy Carrots, the, like, leader of the Rangers, it's meant to submit that she's kind of a hard-ass, but it really just cements that she's just also a monster. We get told a little fun story where we get told the doctrine that like Steel Rangers consider themselves to be the inheritors of the ministry. And subsequently all technology is under their purview for that reason. And they talk about a story in which the companions, like the cool kids, like Big Daddy and stuff, found a water talisman in a dead stable, and a water talisman is the thing that turns water into pure drinking water in the setting. And Crunchy Carrots insisted that it belonged to her because she was a member of the Rangers. And when they like couldn't decide what to do with it, they didn't want to part with it, and someone wanted to sell it, Crunchy Carrots just destroyed it because she just refused to like let that technology go into anyone's hands besides the Steel Rangers, which like. So somber. I could almost understand this if it was a dangerous weapon, like a nuke launcher or a space death laser or whatever. But this is the thing that turns water into drinking water. This is not how you sell your character as being a hard ass. This is how you sell them as an irredeemable monster.
Yeah. No. Yeah, no. Basically, for their religious convictions, for their sheer greed on behalf of their home faction, they would not allow anyone else to have access to that monopoly.
And specifically, a monopoly of generations worth of drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fucking come on.
If Crunchy Carrots isn't dead, they should be.
Yes. Yes, they should. We are supposed to sympathize with Crunchy Carrots, by the way.
What?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, no. If we were at the beginning of this journey, I would have had an emotional response, let me tell you.
Yeah. But not anymore. You've been desensitized to, like, this bullshit. But yeah, anyways, hard cut again. They wander through the blasted ruins again to get to the HMS Celestia, which is the name of the ship. Don't worry about it. Not sure if I've said that yet. But this is a time for more angst, because Scotch tape inventory item extraordinaire.
New name Squatch.
Squatch. She questions what actually like. Happened and what she can't remember, because she's like convinced she killed somebody, and Beach is like, yeah, you killed somebody and to save my life, and also admits that like they mangled her memories, which, you know, Scotch is suitably pretty damn upset about. But this whole scene is so fucking like it's another one of those cases where I would love to feel for this character, but I do not care about Scotch in the slightest. She has done virtually nothing in the story besides be like kind of like I had this thought yesterday. She's basically just like portable baggage. She's like she.
Emotional and material baggage. She counts both toward your over encumbrance limit and your emotional stamina.
Yes, because she's basically just walking survivor's guilt over the whole Stable 99 thing, which is in itself a parallel to like the 40 Foles thing. So she's just a walking, talking dead baby, basically, as far as the story is like concerned. But yeah, this scene is barely about her though. Because she runs away heartbroken over all the circumstances, which prompts baby murder rampage to rear her ugly head. Like, it's literally like one of those, like, oh, Scotch is emotionally suffering in a small child. I can fix that. They catch wind of it before Rampage skirts off, and we just get a scene of her getting murdered really horribly again.
So that actually did catch me by surprise. They couldn't even save Pilotland. They couldn't even, like, Summer is such a useless, edgy piece of shit. And of course, the baby has to literally die now. Like, she's served, like, whatever purpose she had. And, like, as precisely what you're talking about. As like, literal, simultaneously literal and figurative baggage.
Oh, no, I think there's some confusion. She doesn't get killed by a Rampage. They plug a bunch of bullets into Rampage and make her stop moving because it's a reset button. Remember, it's the it's the paperclip in the laptop.
I completely misheard you.
Yeah, yeah.
There was some it's been edited out, but there was sort of an explosion in the boiler in our bunker here, and so we had to reset the call after we put out the fires. So there might have been. Yeah. So I misheard you. Like I laughed for a good. I'm out a little bit out of air from laughing so hard at thinking that like Somber straight up killed poor Pocket Lint after all.
After all of this shit.
Just to add more like unearned pathos.
Yeah, no. Rampage gets bodied instead.
In time. All right.
Rampage gets blasted, and then gets a sword put through her head by 21.
By 21, okay.
Yeah, 21 does something for once. Because she's on top of Blackjack and, like, digging into her with her hoof claws, and so, like, the only person who can save, did you just...
Horse pull is horse Wolverine.
She is I guess this has never come up before, but like one of the myriad of like melee and unarmed weapons within this setting are like horseshoes, but like in the MLP vernacular, pony shoes are just shoes you wear. But they have like metal jagged spikes that come out of the fronts of them, so you can like dig into people. That just slipped my mind like up to this moment. Yeah, because Rampage is normally covered in a bunch of metal and spikes and stuff, but she also has like claws and stuff because she's an unarmed character. But yeah, she's ripping into BJ and then gets a sword through her head. And there's a bit of a comedy moment where she like resets to being like normal Rampage, but she still has the sword through her head. She's like slurring because like there's a sword in her brain. But then 21 snaps at her for the whole thing. Of being a baby killer, and then snaps at Blackjack for the whole like, why are we here, why didn't we just quit, like this is, we're all doomed, you're dying and there's nothing we can do to fix that, which again would be impactful if it wasn't for the fact that we like know they can't go back at this point, and this is like the third time they've done this this whole like routine. Yeah,
and if any of them had raised objections to this, like this is just like, yes. like normally, when people when a character has a freak out like this, like it has some sort of emotional impact because like they're being in some way like tragic choices like led everyone to this place. The calculus seemed worth it at the time to someone,
mm-hmm.
but this was all manifestly like irredeemably stupid. Like, yeah, you shouldn't have like left. Like, that's on you. Like, who's more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him?
Well, and there's a specific point that is being made with this particular rant that he's asking why Blackjack decided to do this, and he's kind of blaming her for getting them all killed, but, like, she has pointed out multiple times to stop following her. Like, she has less than 6 months to live. This is a doomed voyage, and she knows it, so, like, go and do other things with your lives. But they kept insisting on going. Like, this is on 21 to keep following her at this point. But again, it's not framed like that, because it can never be framed like that. So instead we get this... Sorry.
Wait, is like... I want to ask you a sort of fast-forwarding question. Like, is he called out for, like, being an abusive, like, sack of shit here, because he is, like, just projecting his own mistakes onto everybody else and, like, refusing to take accountability for his own, like, hilariously poor decision making.
At best, you could interpret it because of the way that, like, some of the dialogue is, that he is essentially projecting his own, like, because I talked about before that he also has gained a martyr complex at some point, and he's become, like, a brother's keeper to, like, to BJ, where he, like, blames himself for her bad actions because of, like, being like, dubbed the, like, moral compass of the story up to this point. But, like, that stuff still just rings super hollow because, like, 21 is just a very, like, empty character with, like, very little characterization outside of, like, snide comments and being, like, kind of a queer nonsense shitbag. So it's not super justified for him to be like this about it. And it, again, it just comes down to, like, you were given the option to leave multiple times, and, like, this is now, like, this rant has no sting to it.
He was not only given the option to leave several times, he was somehow given the option to leave well past the point of no return.
Yes.
And still refused that fast travel button.
Yep, just refused it. But the shittier thing is that, like, BJ's response to all this is so comprehensively stupid. It's such a way a writer would want to write a character out of the situation, like, this argument, but, like, doesn't feel good. Where her response to him's being like, "Why are you still doing this?" And Blackjack's response was, "Before I, like, left the stable, I was basically nothing. I was a nobody drifting through my life, completely devoid of." contrast and also consequence, and I, like, hate that I was, like, I was a pawn of a system that, like, did so much damage to people that they subsequently cared about, and they want to undo, like, they want to, like, karmically undo some of the harm they've done throughout the course of their life by trying to do something good before they die. And, like, that's so, like, It's such a case of, like, that is a potentially good point. That is super not the response to this conversation, though. Like, it's putting so much personal, individualistic blame on the self for someone telling you that, like, you've gotten them killed, because they followed you. Like,
yeah, context is not. It just isn't. Like, context does not apply here.
Specifically, BJ does not argue against his points because fundamentally, 21 is the stallion who is always right. So, like, she can't, because Somber doesn't think he does anything wrong. BJ can't argue against him, and therefore, like, her only solution is, like, "Oh, I'm a shitbag and I'm trying to become a better person," and that's her, like, response out of this, because it can't just be that 21 is wrong. Like, it can't just be that, like 21, like, BJ's like, "Dude, you've been dodging, like, your only family for fucking, like, since you found out, and, like, you've just been a huge shitbag to everyone that has ever cared about you, and, like, you have, like, a lot of right to, but at some point you have to, like, learn to start healing." But, like, none of that's addressed. That's all pushed under the rug because it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. Like, I keep, because he's so irrelevant to everything else that happens, I keep forgetting, like, my own moral distaste of, like, hey, 21, you're mad? You feel morally wronged by what's happening here? Maybe, suck my ass. I told you to never tell me. like, ever since you abandoned your child and, like, and in so doing abandoned, like, everything you've ever claimed to, like, stand for, I thought I told you to never fucking tell me about your morals. Like,
yeah. It's within context. He just does not have any footing to stand on besides the fact that, like, Somber identifies the fact that, like, him having, like, parental, like, him not even wanting to be a father is a problem, but it's a problem in a vacuum. It's not representative of a larger compromise of his morals and ethics. It's just he's a bad dad. But, fuck. And then she also regurgitates the fucking, like, thing that 21 says at the beginning of, like, in chapter 2, about, like, doing the whole, you live your life trying to make up for the wrongs you've made, knowing that no matter what you do, it'll never be enough. I'm paraphrasing entirely, but I don't remember the whole thing off the top of my brain. Which, you know, it resets the whole group. Everyone's like, okay, we're gonna do this again. Faith restored. Oh, we still got a lot of chapter to get through, so, you know, I'm gonna move on. They head underground for a while. I don't remember why. I don't think it really matters. They fight ghouls for a while. BJ and Scotch Tape reconcile over, like, the fact that, like, basically, like, the fact that, like, everything is awful, and, like, her trying to do this was, like, trying to spare her some atrocity. And there's kind of a dick measuring contest of misery, where Scotch is, like, talking about, like, having some radiation poisoning and being like, oh, radiation didn't hurt nobody, and, like, Blackjack just, like, rolling up one of her sleeves to show up her, like, gangly noodle filled with tumors, where it's like, oh, you think having memory loss is a problem? Try being, like, broken. Like,
try having a tumor noodle. Flip, like bats are in the face with it. Flip, flip, flip.
It just makes, like, a whapping noise.
Flip, 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 flip.
It just makes a soft whapping noise.
Stop it, Blackjack. Well, I mean, you tell me which is worse again. Memories or tumor noodles? Flip, flip, flip. Tumor noodles, oh god, fuck it.
Yeah, basically. But, Jesus Christ. They get underneath the base, and then they, like, they split the party, again, by saying, like, Lacuna, stay back because you're gonna teleport it in, when we need you. Scotch and Glory need to stay back because Scotch is... It's another death flag where Blackjack is like, if I can't fix this war, it's up to you, Scotch, to fix this. You and Glory are gonna have to do it. So Glory has to stay behind as well. So it's now just the team of 21... BJ and Rampage. They enact the fake give up plan, where they find the, like, acolyte.
They do the Joker.
Yes, they meet up with,
or they do the supervillain plan of every post Dark Knight action movie for, like, 3 years.
Yes. I will get captured, like, and then bust out miraculously.
Like it fucking happened in the James Bond movie of that era. It happened, like, it was just a period where that was the only acceptable villain plan.
But they meet up with Chief Acolyte Napalm Strike, who they chat with him for a while because they're like, we're giving up. We're gonna, like, BJ keeps selling this idea to the Steel Rangers that, like, I will give you the location of my. Stable as long as I get to talk to Crunchy Carrots, because he's trying to get the whole thing called off. And Napalm Strike's like, well, we don't really need to worry about that anyways, because I've gotten the guns working finally. So this war is basically over, because they can hit any other faction's, like, stronghold from the range that they're at. So now the entirety of the Hoof is now held at gunpoint, more or less. But they still managed to get into, like, trying to...
Whoopsie doodle.
Yep.
Whoopsie doodle. Turns out every, like, again, like, everything, like, we've won this and all conceivable wars. So this was an entirely pointless exercise on your part.
Yep, congratulations. No peace for you. Also, just to up the stakes of this like, finalish chapter, the crew of the Seahorse, the Sea Pirates, are just here. there is an explanation of what happened. Is that so? There are two ships in the Hoof Bay. There is the HMS Celestia, which was docked, and then there is the HMS Luna, which had all the ammo for the guns on it. And the Sea Ponies, like the Capricorn and Pisces from the Collegiate, teamed up with the Seahorses to get stuff out of that, and they found the bullets, and then they got captured by the Rangers properly, and that's how all that happened. That was all happening in the background while, like, basically from the moment they left the collegiate, that was what was going on in the background.
Oh, neat. So things can happen
outside
of Blackjack's immediate line of sight.
Yeah. For once. But, yeah, the crew's been captured. This really only exists so that they, like, because they get searched and all their stuff gets taken away. But, you know, BJ had, like, an extra bobby pin, like, hidden within the lining of her eye patch. So, like, they hand it to 21, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna bust the seahorses out and the sea pirates out. But, like, he's gotta, like, be, you know, taken out of the party, and he's gonna go do his own thing. So he's left the party to save them. So then it's now just BJ and Rampage. They jump some unarmed ranger cadets to steal some guns and equipment. I don't remember when this happens in this chapter, but eventually they just get their equipment back. So, like, that will become relevant really close to the end of this chapter, but I just cannot figure out when they get their shit back. But regardless, they scope through the area, and they overhear Steel Rain basically maniacally gloating about how, like, the hoof is now, you know, under their hoof, whatever. And it's only a matter of time before they've taken the whole wastes under the Steel Ranger thing. And that idealists like Crunchy Carrots and Strong Hoof are a dying breed, and like the new Rangers are gonna take over the wastes, basically. But he also rambles about like the wonders of technology and reveals that like the weird tracking radar technology that the Pit Bucks have are also built into the power armor. So like he's been gloating because he knew that Blackjack was right around the corner the entire time because she came up as a little red dot on his radar. So now we're into the actual like flight of the chapter. So, page 4 of my notes. This is just one giant, crazy fight scene, which, again, this is going to come down to that problem of, like, I don't hate it, because it's actually kind of, like, engaging and exciting. Because there's this whole crazy run-and-gun scene where, Rampage and Blackjack are trying to get out of the base, and Steel Rain is just firing like fucking heavy ordnance inside of a building. So there's all sorts of crazy dumb explosions and shit. Rampage eventually gets clipped by his like flat cannon and just turns into red mist. So it's just BJ by herself for the rest of the scene. BJ manages to get out onto the like landing pad, like onto the actual carrier, like the aircraft carrier part of the aircraft carrier. And it's in the rain, this big giant dramatic scene where like Steel Rain like is standing over top of her and like she's down and she seems like she's out for the count. So of course Steel Rain takes the opportunity to like gloat more about like about his evil maniacal plan to like supplant Crunchy Carrots and all that shit, which of course like gets revealed at the last second that like that she's been radioing this entire like conversation to like the speaker system in the base. So like his entire master plan gets outed, which for the sake of subversion is a completely worthless plot point, because immediately after like Country Carrot's like badass, you know, leather faced looking fucking old woman Crunchy Carrot shows up and menaces him with her Iron Lady shtick, and then we immediately find out that like none of the Rangers really like give a shit about what she thinks, and that like the old guard is supposed to die, and none of the Rangers really like are on her side. So when she like demands he gets arrested for his crimes of treason, like the Rangers just immediately switch sides, making this entire plot point pointless. Like, it's the fastest turnaround of pointlessness I've ever seen, where you do this whole thing of, like, you do the cliche of, like, I was wearing the wire the whole time, and then, like, you know, the police chief shows up, and then, like, all the cops turn on the police chief, basically, and it's like, what the fucking point was any of this except for to be subversive? Like, it adds nothing to the story to do this. It's a waste of time. That was a waste of, like, a minute of breath. at least.
I mean, I don't.
It, it, it,
I could make an argument for it in that it does, like, it's a running mistake that I could see myself doing, because I would be interested and amused to see, like, oh no, you've exposed me to everyone on the base, who I've long since recruited because I'm doing a coup.
Yeah. But still, counterpoint, though, is this would work if Crunchy Carrots was someone that we were on the side of, but she is a monster.
The only thing we know about her is that she's a monster. Like,
yes. Somber wants us...
in the first place, backed this whole, like, fucking bad guys from Captain America 2. Like, this fucking... Like, this is exactly the evil plot of Hydra in Captain America Winter Soldier. So Crunchy Carrots is, like, the architect of that shit. So...
Congratulations.
Oh, no. Hold on, let me get you some fucks. Oh, there's been a drought. The field where I grow my fucks lies fallow.
But anyways, the whole thing turns to shit when all the Rangers start shooting at each other. There's a couple of them that are loyal to Carrots, but most of them are on Rain's side. But it turns into a whole big bloodbath where most of them tear each other apart. BJ takes the time to scramble out of the scene because she's going to go and try and, like, stop the gun from firing somehow. She doesn't really have much of a plan here. But she gets on top of, like, the firing platform when, like, the first couple of volleys get fired out of the gun, and there's a lot of time spent on, like, how ridiculous this gun is spent out, which admittedly is a fine point. We spent this entire book of this story leading up to, like, the guns are a big problem, like, they have the Doomsday weapon, so getting to actually get to see fired and blast through a couple of buildings and shit is pretty nuts. So BJ gets up onto the firing system, and, like, it, you know, just as she does, Rain gets up onto the other side, and they have, like, a little, like, you know, Metal Gear style boss fight really quickly, and, like, BJ's pretty haggard, and she takes a couple of shots at Steel Rain, which, like, busts open as his mask and, like, reveals he's, like a pretty anime boy, basically. We'll get into that later, but he basically just looks like an anime, like, horse.
The most boring subversion.
Yes, the most boring subversion. But he, like, responds in kind by firing a grenade shotgun at her, which, like, due to some combination of shrapnel, like, shatters all of her, like, leg braces and also takes out her other eye. So there's this, like... So this is where we get into the only set, like, the whole set piece that this entire war was built on, is to set the scene. Blackjack is completely sprawled out, bleeding to death. Her eyes are ripped apart. She's completely blind. Steel Rain is standing over top of her, feeling victorious. And Blackjack, like, weakly, like, pulls up, like, Trottenheimer's Folly and, like, knows that, like, that, like, she can't fire it again, knowing that it'll kill her, and she like points it at Steel Rain shakily with her telekinesis, and, like, the dealer the entire time is, like, begging her, like, in the only time he's ever been earnest.
No, I'm sure there's a way.
Don't
enter the afterlife. Don't enter my afterlife.
So jokes aside, like, it's
stay off my lawn.
So joke, like, weird jokes aside, there's this really, like, it's the only time, like, the dealer's ever felt, like, earnest in this. He's, like, begging her, like, don't do this to yourself, like, don't like, you, like, there has to be something else you can do, which of course we know there isn't. Like, this is an actual powerful scene. It's actually really kick-ass, at least to me.
I super doubt it, because, like, I don't know, it, like, maybe there's some outside chance that he, like, that Somber, like, really just sells it in the prose, but based on the prose I've seen, I find that doubtful. Like, there's no fucking stakes here. She's dead. Like, she is, her limbs are noodled, she's bleeding out. Like, even if her victorious enemy spares her for no explicable reason, for no reason that I can think of, probably gonna die anyway. Like, is toast. Like, you have the choice of, like, using a weapon that will kill you to as a trump card over an enemy that has you in the corner, or just letting your enemy win and dying, going out with a whimper, out into that good night, letting evil having triumph.
But
there's
like
no stakes here. There's
but
no
like my counterpoint is, I think that's totally wrong though. Like not to argue for Somber in any way. Like my sticking point to this is I'm on the complete opposite side because I really like desperation in a story because it's like an actual force of tension, and like the idea of like a character being so backed against a corner that like you have like the sacrifice gun that like only works if you kill yourself slowly by inches is a really potent thing for me personally as a storytelling device. You're not wrong that there's technically it's one of those things where like depending on how much you care about the character is I guess how much you care about this, and even for all of Somber's faults, I still like find myself liking Blackjack no matter what. Like even with all of the horrible shitty backstory that Somber has ever written for Blackjack, I still find myself charmed by her even with Somber's shitty writing. I think it's just really just comes down to it's me as a fan and as the audience putting so much more into the character than what is actually present, which is why this scene works so well for me. Like my version of Blackjack that's in my head is so much more interesting than the way Somber presents her. So that version of the character in this moment of like absolute desperation is still gets to me no matter what. Like and that's just purely like a one-sided affair, obviously, but still. But to like finish the scene where like it does the like one cool unexpected thing I wasn't expecting when I read this the first time is she just like points it to the ground and just shoots the ship with the Trottenheimer, blowing the entire thing to hell.
This is the minimum consequence of firing this goddamn thing that I've been waiting for this entire fucking time.
Is what if you hit underneath you?
No, if the blowing up a fucking super, super carrier. Like, until now, it's just, okay, a helicopter, okay, some, underground monster thing. Like, I've been expecting something, that is named, a name reference to Oppenheimer. And having, so much, setting build-up for the rarity of the ammo that, firing it would be a big consequential, a buildings fall kind of deal. And up until now, every firing of it has been completely unnoteworthy. So good on Somber for, the final discharge of this weapon, at all matching its promise and its expectation of, devastation.
Well, again,
overpoweredness.
Again, not to give Somber too much credit, but that's kind of how you write a payoff though, is you establish a couple of you establish a couple of teasers of what it can do, and then you get that big pop of its actual proper usage. This might be the only time anything ever gets paid off in a way that I could deem interesting. So that's why I'm really defensive of this one singular plot detail. As much as I don't like Trottenheimer's folly, because I don't like the cliche of main character gets a super gun that for virtue of the story cannot use more than three times. And the casualty of it killing the user only really works if you care about the story, the story's protagonist, and can be reasonably convinced that there's actually stakes to them using it, which I mean, there are stakes. It's just that it comes back down to the same thing that has been has been part of this podcast the entire time we've been doing this. Weird doesn't care about any of this, and therefore I don't mean story stuff. He doesn't care about the characters at all because he's not given any reason to, because Somber's writing is terrible. but like I have a strong emotional attachment from all sorts of weird, dumb baggage to the characters, regardless of their shitty writing. So I'm like, I'm equally as defensive of certain decisions in it, even though I can recognize that a lot of that stuff is just me as an audience member making something better out of like pre-existing garbage material.
You're a mark.
Yeah, basically. And
ain't no shame in being a mark.
I'm a smark, I guess.
Yeah.
And
wrestling terms, folks. Yeah. They're the best.
Yeah. For those that don't know wrestling, a mark is someone who like is there to like make sure that like that you know they mark out to a person's like wrestling thing. It's to sell that person's character and identity. And a smark is a person who is a smart mark or like someone who's aware that they're a mark and they're being played, but doesn't care at all because they enjoy the like. They enjoy the like transitive, illusory nature of wrestling. And I guess it's a similar case for me. Like you know, someone wrote a bad main character who sucks. He's like a lame edgelord drug addict. But like in my like perpetual retelling of it, she's instead like a weird pansexual polyamorous like goofy redneck who's doing her best and failing a lot of the time. And I find that really endearing. But like that's totally like my own fabrication. But anyways, the only other thing that happens in the story is like the fucking ship splitting in two and all of the like all the metal like falling apart as like BJ's falling into the sea. And the last scenes we see of her is BJ like floating in the darkness, her eyes stinging from the salt water as like rubble is falling down. And that's the end of our chapter is her thinking on her like on her thoughts of everything that has led her up to this point till now.
Well, good podcast, Fi. Like,
oh man,
at least it's over. Like, or like I it didn't go quite as crazy as you were
making it out to be.
You're suggesting it might, but like, all right, so. Yeah, I guess we just do our our wrap up for the last time before we close down the podcast. Protagonist is dead. Her story's over, right? Like it's.
Stay tuned for chapter 33 Black, and then chapter 34. I don't remember. And book 3, the continuing adventures of someone. Get ready. Get ready. Chapter 33 is the darkest chapter, and I'm going to not the darkest chapter, but it's a self-imposed darkest chapter. I'm going to give it now, and I'm going to repeat it when we start the next chapter next week. There is a massive content warning on the next chapter, and because probably in the chapter after that will be a recap, I wouldn't like count people against just skipping chapter 33 if they're not comfortable with it, because it's like pretty grotesque and for ways that Somber doesn't even realize.
Somber, like, that's pretty frequent.
Yes.
Somber is very rarely conscious of his darkest
impulses. But yeah, so all of chapter 33 is a content warning.
Oh boy! Are you sure? Is there anything else we could be reading?
I mean, there certainly is, but like, I haven't been. I don't know. I haven't been reading a lot of FOE fics because, like, I've been in like a goofy. I want to read romance fanfics mood, so I can't really recommend anything that's in this setting.
Then I'll give a recommendation, completely divorced from poniness.
Okay, good.
Has nothing to do with our podcast, nothing to do with anything, except that it's just sort of on my mind. Recreators is a pretty good series.
Yeah, I've heard good things.
It's on Amazon, so you should probably pirate it, except that I wouldn't, on a public channel of any kind, recommend that you commit crimes.
But we are strongly thinking it. We are strongly thinking it with our telekinesis brains.
Satire.
Yeah, satire. Of course, satire. Disavow. Don't steal. Don't be gay. Don't do crime.
But Recreators is incredibly interesting and has one of my favorite characters
of all time, which is the premise of Recreators. It's an anime about anime. It's an anime about some unexplained force, and I'm deeply appreciative of the fact that it is totally unexplained, because it is totally unimportant how this came to be. But a bunch of anime characters wind up being dragged into a otherwise realistic Tokyo. Anyway, Japan. And the consequences of that on both the world and those characters. And one of my favorite characters now of all time is Mamika, Magical Slayer Mamika, children's magical girl, pretty cure protagonist, basically. They're all ersatz. They're all like obvious references to popular manga and anime, but with the serial numbers filed off for cost efficiency. And also to make it easier to tell the story that Recreators tells. And Mamika's like development as a person, being exposed to the real world, and that conflicting with her like raw idealism. She's just an aggressively good person, and it is enjoyable watching her on screen. I think, mild spoiler, one of the major punchlines of the character is that, like, she's from a children's magical girl anime. She's from a Pretty Cure series. And one of the first things that, like, really shocks her about having to exist in this world is that her heart beams, her little heart projectiles, like, powderize concrete.
I like that.
She, like, injures someone for the first time in her entire existence, from her perspective. And doesn't know how to, like, process it.
I've been shooting tickle blows up to this point. What have I done?
she turns out to be one of the more, like, terrifyingly, like, powerful characters that gets dragged in the real world. But it's limited by the fact that, like, she, like, is... cannot morally justify the concept of hurting anyone.
Mm-hmm. As a stock magical girl, yeah.
So anyway, that's just one tiny element of, like, I could go on... I could literally go on for hours about how good this show is, and all the different ideas and, like, interplays and stuff that go on in it. It accidentally says some dark things about capitalism. As well, I did, like, and I've talked with this about this to Fi before, but like, there's a weird subversive thing in all good Japanese media, wherein like I get the impression that artists have to like say like play this weird game of chicken with their own producers, wherein they like want to say and do things, but it is, you know, wildly forbidden by Japanese society.
How much?
And so they have to not say them.
How much defamation of capitalism can I put in my story? And then you have to go up like a percentile. But the
tragedy is that it can also read as like an endorsement sometimes, because like anyway, having to operate in a fascistic society is hard. is what I'm saying. Okay, so. All that said, I went on way too long with a non-recommendation that is outside of our ethos. Tell us if you're okay with me recommending like sort of obscure media outside of pony-related stuff. Tell us anything, anything at all.
Otherwise, I'm going to start recommending romantic ship fix, and nobody's going to want that.
You can get to contact us through Twitter. Our two Twitter handles will be in the description of the podcast through whatever service you're listening to us through. Make sure to rate and subscribe and comment and share the word as best you can. Still don't have that Patreon up, mostly because I'm discouraged by all the lack of feedback we hear from you guys.
I mean, I think it's hard,
and I've been super sick this entire week.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of getting it up, and the people will come kind of situation, I think. Weird. We just got to get it going. So. We just got to get it started, and then worry about getting the small trickle of people in first. But yeah, otherwise Weird will be destroyed by a single target meteor that is currently falling faster and faster directly at them. So, you know, gotta get that money in.
It's pretty distressing.
Only money can repel this meteor.
It has the word poverty, like, written in big, like, sort of cartoon letters on it. I am going to be destroyed by a meteor, emitting from, like, inartful political cartoon.
You're about to be killed by a Ben Garrison comic.
Well, I know Ben Garrison would almost certainly endorse my death.
Yes, probably.
Anyway, oh man. Oh, now that the protagonist's dead, I'm starting to think that this all might have been a terrible mistake.